This is Nick Yurick, and you're listening to Let the Hate Flow Through You with Jeremy Shear and El Hordano Diablo.
Let the hate flow!
Available on the Lousy Weather Media Network.
Welcome to Let the Hate Flow Through You, your weekly dose of audible hatred. I'm Jeremy Shear.
El Hordano Diablo.
And this week, we are joined by the host of Synesthesia every Sunday evening from 10 to 12 on 89.3 FM WCSB Cleveland, Dr. Sinister. Welcome.
Yes, let the hate flow through you.
Thanks for coming on, man. I've been wanting to have you for a while.
It is a huge honor. I cannot thank you enough for having me.
Oh, Jesus. Of course.
The pleasure is all mine. So, Dr. Sinister, why do you hate intellectual laziness?
Oh, that's a great question. Go ahead and start with the tough one. And hate is one of those things I've kind of gotten over the years. And, you know, it's funny that I use a name like Sinister on the air. I picked that name when I was like 21 or something. And, age will mellow you out over time. But the one thing that just keeps frustrating me with the human condition, and I have to say, like, getting mad at people for doing this is kind of like getting mad at a baby for shitting its diaper.
Yeah.
It's kind of like getting mad at a dog for barking when the doorbell rings. You know, that's just what people do. And I'm still really struggling to get over the fact that people, they just don't really consider all the implications of these ideas they have. And that has implications in pretty much every aspect of society and culture that we know of. You know, we could even talk about how that applies in the movie business. We could talk about how that applies in politics or science or anti-science.
Well, let's start with something easy. The movie business.
All right. So the movie business. When's the last time that we saw a whole bevy of blockbuster films that were completely new ideas rather than just a retread or a reboot or a remake?
I can't think of the last, the only blockbuster that's not even Avatar is still a retread.
Well,
it was Dances with Wolves in Space.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet.
Neither have I.
But not that. I haven't seen this movie yet, but I've heard enough about it. That Midsommar movie, that I read the description of today because, friend OK Pants, the artist, he posted about it on Twitter, and I've been hearing about this movie that it's fucked up and it leaves people leaving the theater all like, what the fuck did I just watch, you know, kind of thing.
Okay.
And it's in major movie theaters, so it's not like it's some small indie flick or something like that. Uh-huh. And I asked him on Twitter, I was like, what is that movie even about? Because I didn't think to look it up. I haven't seen a trailer or anything. And he goes, it's better if you just don't know going in, which is what a lot of people told me about that movie, The Witch, which I also really dug. That is something that I would say wasn't a retread, but it's also a lower budget film.
I'm going to disagree with you on Midsommar only because watching the trailer, it just reminds me of The Wicker Man.
I guess, I get that. I understand where you're coming from on that. But when I read the, I have not seen the trailer, but when I read the description today and I was like, huh, that's pretty interesting. It's like a couple goes on a retreat and it ends up being like some pagan fucking craziness or something like that.
Yeah, it sounds like Wicker Man, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is supposedly a good movie.
Fact, isn't the original movie, like, was the island called like Summer something or Summer Isle or something like that?
That
would, so even the name is kind of a callback to that.
Okay.
And
what about The Witch?
To be honest, I have not been to a movie theater in like 10 years.
The Witch is now on Netflix. It's something I suggest.
I don't have Netflix.
Okay. Well, it's just something I suggest everybody watch because, like, everybody's like, oh, it's a horror movie. It's a horror movie. It's not.
And,
it's a suspense film.
And also, big business, too. Mm-hmm. Not just the movie business. That just came to mind because we're surrounded by film memorabilia here.
Yeah, the Chatter Squadron studio.
Yeah, so what I also have noticed is that a lot of really big companies out there that revolutionized our lives in one way or another with some kind of new technology that they brought to market.
Like Elon Musk?
Well, Elon Musk hasn't really changed that much yet. I don't know that he ever will. You know, it's too soon to tell. But I mean, if you take a look at, you know, the big, you know, the, what it comes down to is every time someone identifies a social harm that these big businesses are doing and proposes a regulation, that immediately, you know, the big business will fight tooth and nail and spend all their money lobbying against it. And other times, you know, we see society changing. Like you see what happened to a company like Eastman Kodak.
Right.
You know, they actually had the first patent on a digital camera, but they didn't do anything with it. And who uses film anymore? Mm-hmm. You know, they were just, they had their heads in the sand. They were in denial about the world changing around them. That's also kind of true of some of the big banks out there, or the fossil fuel companies, the big insurance companies, all these big corporations, even a company like Apple, some of these so-called innovative tech companies, even they are starting to fall prey to this where, you know, they changed the world because they had this crazy new idea and it just happened to be profitable. And they put the right resources into the right things at the right time. And there's a certain amount of courage that takes and a certain amount of dynamism that you have to adjust when, you know, when you're exploring uncharted territory. But every single time that the market starts shifting or anytime regulations start changing, they always dig in their heels and say, well, no. Like, this is how we make money. This is what we know how to do. How dare you tell us that we can't do it this way anymore? You know, so the idea of hiding from societal and economic and technological change just to keep doing things the only way you know how to do them, even though once upon a time your company was founded by people who created a whole new way to do things. It's like you've lost your mojo. Yep. What happened to the guts you used to have? What happened to the creativity you used to have?
Capitalism.
You can't find. Well, even capitalism will actually reward people like this, you know. I consider myself a little bit socialistic and a little bit capitalistic. I don't think you have to be one or the other.
Yeah, I'm more in the middle. Both. I would agree. I'm more in the middle.
I'm going to say it depends
on the
situation.
I want people to make money, but I also want people to be taken care of.
Right. Right. So, like, you know, what happened to that entrepreneurial courage that you used to have that allowed you to change the world in the first place? You're saying you don't have that anymore. Now you're just going to dig in your heels and insist on keeping doing the same thing that you've been doing for the last 10, 20 years or whatever. And you can't innovate anymore. Okay, you can't adjust anymore.
Going back to the movie thing.
Yeah.
You know, you said we're surrounded, like Star Wars, obviously, Disney buying Star Wars. I'm a Star Wars nut. Like I am, you know, like it's something I love. It's something I've loved my entire life. So I'm happy with these movies when they come out, you know, like, but I've gotten to the point where it's like, I'm a comic book fan. Mm-hmm. I always have been and I always will be. Mm-hmm. Dude, I can't keep up anymore. And it's like, you know, I haven't seen Captain Marvel. It took me forever to see Black Panther. I only have seen a handful of seasons of however many seasons there are of those Netflix shows. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like Daredevil's one of my favorites. So of course I'm going to watch that. But like, I do, like, everything is a rehash now, you know, like, just like how, I mean, there's a million examples, like the Baywatch movie that The Rock did, or Rampage that The Rock did, or fucking, how many Fast and Furious movies are there now? Like, fucking.
Not enough.
My head's starting to hurt just thinking
about it. Right? No, but like, so I get what you're saying, like, 100%, but like, I raise this question. What about Tarantino flicks? Like the one that's coming out with Leo and fucking Brad Pitt, all about like Charles Manson and all that shit.
That's a retread, though.
It's telling a story.
It's been done.
I know nothing about this. I've seen like pictures.
Once upon a time in Hollywood.
Yeah, I've heard about it, but I didn't know it was about the Manson family.
It's. I don't know if it's directly.
I mean, that's what it takes place in, is that story.
Well, if it's a story that takes place in that time and place that hasn't been told before, then maybe it will be original. I don't know.
I mean, Tarantino, even though he rips off a bunch of filmmakers within his films, he still is original.
Yeah, and you know, Tarantino is an established institution in and of himself at this point. You know, we're talking about over a quarter of a century since
Reservoir Dogs,
big time. Yeah. And some directors get to a point where they can just do whatever they want. No one's going to tell them no.
Right.
And I don't know if that's the case or not. I haven't seen any of his recent films. I mean, I really liked his early work, but then again, I was a teenager when I saw it for the
Tarantino?
First time. So, yeah.
Oh, so you haven't seen like Hateful Eight or Django?
No. I think the last of his movies I saw was actually, I think it was Death Proof.
Oh, okay. Which was very good. I honestly, dude, if you like Tarantino, I highly recommend Inglourious Basterds. That one's fantastic. What was the one after that?
I think he did Hateful Eight after that.
No, there was one in between. Django. Django Unchained. Hateful Eight's okay, in my opinion.
Well, but in terms of intellectual laziness, you can apply it to Tarantino because he still uses the same pacing and the same formulaic.
I wouldn't say pacing. I'd say that he uses certain platforms, like the spaghetti western, or like he uses certain. I don't think that it's fair to say that he doesn't take that platform and make it his own.
I mean, but because it's his own, it's a Tarantino movie and it's still the same thing.
Oh, it's a branding thing for sure.
But it's like, okay, you've seen Death Proof.
When you say it's a branding thing, do you mean like in terms of what kind of tropes he uses or in terms of the cinematography and editing and all that?
All of it. And honestly, what it mostly comes back to with him for me is dialogue. You can turn on a Tarantino flick
and you know,
it's a fucking Tarantino dialogue, flick. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's like, but you're still treading along. It would be like if, I don't know, did you see Juno?
Yeah.
Okay. Because Diablo Cody has very specific dialogue, too. But
do you know the movie with Ellen Page?
Yeah.
What about it?
Oh, it's
about that girl that should have gotten an abortion.
Yeah. Basically. But, man, her dialogue's really different, and nobody talks like that.
Oh, you said her name, the writer. She's
Diablo
also,
Cody.
Oh, wait. No, all right, so it's not. Why did I think that was the same lady who did Orange is the New Black? It's Joe. That's the lady who did
Hypercon.
My bad.
That's the author that came up with that.
Yeah, but the lady who wrote Weeds wrote the show.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you.
Orange is the New Black. I got confused. That's my bad.
Okay, but as far as the Tarantino thing, like you've seen Death Proof, you've seen Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Now, like, take the dialogue that happens in Pulp Fiction, like when they're out eating, is the same kind of thing that when the girls are all sitting around.
Yeah, pretty much any Tarantino film that I actually have seen, anyone, you know, assuming that you adjust for setting and characters, like,
right.
You know, that dialogue style could fit.
Like the beginning of Reservoir Dogs.
Exactly.
When they're, you know, the Madonna and the tipping the conversation. I mean, yes.
That could have been Honey Bunny and Pumpkin.
He has tropes, is what I'm saying. I don't think that is that retreading, really? I mean,
tropes,
like,
are tools. It's a question of how you use them. Can you find a new way to mix a new bunch of tropes together? Because nobody ever comes up with anything completely original.
No, you can't anymore.
But, you know, when it comes to the whole laziness thing, the lazy thinking thing, or the cowardly thinking thing, is people don't take the time to stop and think, what exactly is it that made this good in the first place? Not just what made it good, but what made it a game changer in the first place.
Can I bring up a director? Yeah. Now that we're talking about movies, and like,
now that you're not confused, yes.
Yeah, I admitted it. Jesus fucking Christ. Where do you stand on David Lynch's work?
I've only seen a few of his movies.
They're not original.
You know what else? I'd like to compare him to Tim Burton, like when in his heyday. In terms of, here's the comparison.
No, I'm listening. I'm like,
here's the comparison I'm going to make, okay? People find both of their films kind of divisive. Either you love them or you hate them.
Yeah, there's no in between.
I can't stand the vast majority of movies that Tim Burton made. They're just so maudlin, and I can't take it. David Lynch, though, just keeps it weird enough. Like,
he's
Blue
an
Velvet,
artist,
for example.
Man.
Like, Blue Velvet, I didn't know what to make of it the whole time. All the way at the end of the day, I still can't decide. Like, is this drama? Is this comedy? Is this
dude? That's exactly what he wants from you. Yeah. I just bought the Criterion Collection of that, and I was watching the special features as you do with a Criterion Collection. And Isabella Rossellini, she was talking about the rape scene.
Yeah,
and she said that when they were filming it, David Lynch was behind the camera and he was laughing, and it made her very uncomfortable. And she stopped the scene and she was like, David, why are you laughing? This isn't funny. It's a rape scene. He goes, and I guess she like did it in his like, he was chuckling. He goes, I don't know. I just find this funny because of like, so what she said was, she goes, after, you know, that was when I was filming the movie. She goes, when I went back and watched it 15 years later, I thought it was funny too. Because like you, like he does not want you to interpret his films in his specific way. He wants you to interpret it in your way.
And I can almost imagine how Isabella Rossellini would have had that kind of reaction if that was the first time she'd worked with him, or if that's the first time she'd done a scene like that with him, because of her, you know, resume.
Sure.
Up to that point.
And they were together, I believe, at that point.
You know, like knowing that you're in a situation where it's not clear if it's supposed to be funny or not.
It's scary.
Even if it's, yeah, it's, but it's scary either way.
It's you know what it is? It's unsettling.
And, you know, that's kind of, you know, I'm a failed writer myself. I used to try and write all these stories when I was a teenager that had that same kind of quality in terms of, like, I don't know, like I was writing something with some high tension drama or whatever. And then I just throw in some gag randomly that totally makes, like, everybody I showed it to said, what the hell is this, you know?
But it made sense to you.
It made sense to me, but it didn't make sense to anybody else I showed it to, so I kind of gave up on trying to write those kinds of stories.
And because I'm a huge David Lynch guy. Uh-huh. Like, I very, very much, he's a big influence on me, because when I think I may have told this on the podcast before, I don't know for sure. The first time I saw, the first David Lynch thing I ever saw was Eraserhead. I was probably classic. 18 or 19 years old, and I was with my first girlfriend, who was a year younger than me.
Well, you had a girlfriend of that age?
Yeah. She was hot, too. That's the craziest thing.
It is crazy.
Yeah. We watched Eraserhead at that age. And it's, I believe the runtime's like right around 2 hours. And me and her looked at each other while the credits were rolling. And we were like, we need to watch this again, because I don't know what the fuck I just watched. And we did. And I still didn't understand it. But like, Eraserhead is what led him to Elephant Man, which, you know, it's a linear story told, which is like, is not David Lynch's thing, but he did a very good job at doing that, because, but that's not, I've read his books, you know, I've read his interviews. I'm like borderline obsessed with the dude. And like, to me, are you a Twin Peaks fan?
Yeah, sort of.
Did you watch The Return?
I saw the first season only, and I saw Fire Walk With Me, and it was just, you know, surreal. And, you know, what's really funny is David Lynch has never done drugs in his life, and yet every single one of his works is like an acid trip in so
many. Oh, yeah, 100%.
So, you know, whether you understand it or not is kind of beside the point. It's just a crazy little trip.
I think it's all subjective.
And so I wonder if... If the next David Lynch came along today, nobody would take a chance on anything that radical, and it wouldn't get that kind of distribution. And, you know, here we are recording a podcast, which, you know, speaks to the fact that it's gotten so much easier with technology for people to get access to a large platform. You know, at the same time, you know, it saturates the market, and nobody's going to make it big anymore.
He just said saturated, so, and he called us fat.
No. I'm sure you're polyunsaturated, or maybe mono unsaturated. That's
I'm
the
a saturated fat.
Right? Fat. Yeah, well, I'm carrying around a bit more than I want to myself. But in any case, you know, once the market becomes saturated with these original ideas, and nobody can get really big time distribution for anything, the big time exposure, you know, because the, you know, the powers that be, the big media companies, you know, they only want to do what they know how to do already, and they're afraid to take chances on new ideas
because of intellectual laziness. It's like, this is what we know works,
right?
It's the same thing with the businesses. Like, this is what we know how to do,
and that can go into politics as well. You know, it's, it, you know, for example, you could take either one of the two major parties, and they both have, you know, you have stereotypes about both of them.
Sure.
You know, oh, the left, they just think that government is the, you know, more government's the answer. That's what they think. Ooh. And, you know, Republicans, oh, they just think that cutting taxes for the rich and slashing regulations will fix all our problems. You know, except, well, is that really what they think? You know, and, you know, the, because part of me, you know, suspects a greater degree of cynicism on one side than the other.
Well, you'll appreciate this, then. I took one of those political grid tests that, like, you know, it's like 200 fucking questions.
Right.
And, like, it so to place you where you're, where, you know, you answer everything honestly. Don't be a fucking idiot. And it, I was in the lower left quadrant, right in the middle, and it said, you are an anarcho-leftist libertarian. I was like, what the fuck does that even mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I, you know, another thing too, like intellectual laziness there, when the inability of most people to take two conflicting ideas and reconcile them that we both know to be true. I mean, like, that's like even in the world of physics, you know, trying to reconcile, you know, relativity and quantum mechanics or however that works. You know, I'm not a physicist, but
no.
But, yeah, that's something, you know, that, you know, they know these two things are both true. They just can't figure out how they're both true.
I could care less about trigonometry.
Well,
that's a Breakfast Club quote for anybody who got that.
And, and I identify myself, I describe myself politically as a libertarian socialist. And people are like, what?
Jeremy, kill him.
You can't be that. I'm like, well, no. I mean, like, I believe that, you know, I have the right to be left alone. But I also believe that we're all in this together. You know, like,
yeah.
I believe in socialist means to libertarian ends.
That's almost anarcho, though. Like,
well,
to the point.
No, because there has to be a functioning state in order to, and there have to be, you know, there has to be protections against corruption of that.
You don't that believe state. People could govern themselves in smaller communities?
Well, I'm sure they could, but that's not the kind of universe we've created for ourselves.
No, fair enough. I was just proposing the question.
I mean, we're sitting right here in a place called Lakewood, Ohio, which is like, what, about like 5 square miles, and you have over 50.
I think it is actually, it's 7 by 2. I think it's 7 miles by 2 miles, so it's 14.
Oh, okay, that's more than I thought.
Or no, maybe it is 5 by, it might be 10 square miles, something like that.
It's a postage stamp on the map of Cuyahoga County, and yet you have over 50,000 people crammed into this community.
It's the most, I forget, it's the most per capita in the United States, bleeding out of New York.
Yeah, like between New York and Chicago.
Yes,
the most densely populated
area, yes, correct,
of the country. And, like, okay, so you have all these people here, and, I mean, it's a pretty diverse, I mean, it's more diverse than it was 30 years ago when I was growing up here, but still not that diverse, you know. I mean, but you have a lot of economic diversity. You have some mansions, and you have some shithole apartments, too. And, you know, you have a...
But all in one little area.
All these different kinds of people who have all these different ideas. You know, how do we all govern ourselves? Well, we have this thing called a city council, and we have this guy called a mayor, and, you know, we have these people called judges. And, you know, like that's kind of what democracy has done, you know, representative democracy. Like, this is how people organize and self-govern. But at the same time, you can't just say that Lakewood is its own independent republic, because every day people are crossing one border or another. That means we need to organize at the county level and the state level and the country level.
And you did say level. we have not built it to where, you know, it should be, because that's the thing, is like when I start talking about politics, like, I have very weird ideas that are never going to fucking fly. So I have to just kind of go with the flow. And I hate big government, because I believe that they are I think that they are trying to infiltrate people's lives and fucking what's the word I'm looking for?
Well, here's the
profile
thing.
People.
I'm less afraid of big government than I am of big business.
Well, yeah,
we have more control over big government. You could do this thing called voting. They have these things called elections every year.
Yeah.
You can actually vote and decide who the government is, and guess what?
Locally, I believe that.
Well, you have more...
No, there's no reason to believe it's being completely manipulated at the national level.
Yeah, there's
by big business?
Well, no.
That's different.
That's different. Big
in terms of propaganda, absolutely, that's happening.
Yeah, but, you know, at the very least, you actually do have a voice in, like, national politics. As tiny as it may be, you can influence change.
Especially living in a swing state.
Yeah. But how do you influence the machinations of a big business? Because you're not on that board.
Well, I'm going to take my money elsewhere.
And that's
and what's your $3 to Starbucks? You know what I mean?
I'll just go to a mom and pop coffee shop, or
as long as it's not the Root. Because last time I went in there, somebody was fucking playing a saxophone, and I want to beat the shit out of them.
Yeah, there is a,
and their coffee's not that good.
There is the whiff of patchouli about that.
This episode of Let the Hate Flow Through You is brought all right. to you by the Root.
Let me tell you what I still hate. All right, nobody ever wears just a little bit of patchouli.
That is. Oh, my God, yeah.
And nobody ever
How about nobody should ever wear patchouli, ever?
And nobody ever wears just a little bit of musk, either.
What's musk?
Is it the same thing,
is it like the same type of, like an oil or something?
It's a very strongly scented,
If I smelled it, would I know, oh, that's musk?
If somebody told you it was musk, you'd be like, oh, I've
smelled that before. Yeah. Okay, all right.
You know, like some people put so much of that stuff on themselves that I've had to go into offices, and I'm not going to name names.
Sure,
like,
no, absolutely not.
I go into an office and I have to use the same computer or headset that somebody else was using, and out of nowhere, like my hands,
fucking hippie,
my hands and my face suddenly smell like musk or patchouli because somebody had that much on before. Yeah. That's not secondhand. That's like not even third hand. That's like fourth hand. Patchouli ridiculous. Stink.
I have noticed that with patchouli, though. It's either, you know, you're not using
all or nothing.
It is all or nothing. And I think part of that is because like people use it to cover up their body odor. So they don't know, like, how much to actually
take use. A shower and put some fucking aluminum deodorant on. I don't give a shit what you think, you fucking hippie. Nobody wants to smell you.
So here's a question for you. Do you think patchouli smells like roach spray?
Roach spray?
Yes.
As in spray to kill cockroaches?
Yes.
Like Raid?
I would not know because I have never smelled bug spray except for stuff that was for wasps and hornets.
Yeah, I was getting like Raid. But don't they make that for roaches?
No, I think it's, I mean, there might be some similarity there, but it's, you know, it's different enough that I wouldn't mistake one for the other.
The roach spray I'm talking about is like when you call your landlord and go, hey, I have roaches, and then they come and bomb your house. There's a smell.
Oh, you mean like gassing a fucking house?
Yeah.
Okay,
it's
all right.
The same smell.
Okay, and I didn't know that.
Well, you have not lived in the shitty places I have.
No. All I'm saying is that, you're right. Because I've never had to have my house. I'm not Frank and fucking Charlie.
You know,
from
a great way to control the roach population, get a whole bunch of centipedes. They eat cockroaches.
Centipedes eat cockroaches?
If I remember correctly.
Because those, they're way.
All right. Okay, here's the thing about the centipede, okay. Centipede thing. All right, so, I have a schizophrenic friend, mm-hmm. who he was in a group home, and they actually used the whole centipedes will kill all the other bugs, so we don't have to treat for bed bugs because the centipedes will eat them. Guess who got bed bugs going to visit?
It
doesn't exactly work.
Well, so, nothing's going to fix everything, you know.
Yeah. So it's like, yes, it seems like, you know, this is an idea. It's a green thing. You
know, there you go.
Centipedes.
It's organic. It must be good. It's all natural. Yeah, yeah. Nothing natural ever hurt anybody.
Yeah. And that's like a really lazy thing that I think people do now.
Yeah. I mean, I think over time, it's just the way that products are labeled, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way that. You'll notice that they use very specific words on product labels nowadays that leave you with the impression that it's somehow better than the competitor's product. But it's like if you find out what it actually means, it really doesn't mean anything.
Right.
When they say all natural, I mean, come on. Poison ivy is all natural.
Right.
You know, depending on your definition of nature versus artifice, you could even argue that nuclear waste is natural.
Yeah, you can argue that. I don't know why you would, but...
Well, I would, because people occur in nature, and everything we do is according to human nature. You know, that's the really crazy thing, you know? Most of us spend the majority of our time in completely artificial environments.
Right.
Indoors, you know, and every single object that I can see in front of me right now was invented by a human being.
Yeah.
Who, or was crafted according to some technique, you know, and all these things never would have occurred to me. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd like to think I'm a creative person, but I don't know if I had been living in, you know, I mean, we take some of our inspiration from nature and we take some of our inspiration from you know, acid trips or whatever. I don't know what you want to call it. But, you know, some people come up with some truly original ideas where there's no analog in nature. I mean, like, you know, there are animals that build houses for themselves, but not the way we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, taming fire and inventing refrigeration and, you know, electricity and, you know, crafting that bottle I see on your table there, you know. Mm-hmm. This technology that I'm using right now, none of these things would have ever occurred to me. Even the carpet, I don't know that ever would have occurred to me, to the idea of carpet or a chair, you know? So we're completely surrounded constantly by things that were designed by somebody who was thinking way outside the box at one point or another. And it just took that one person to have that good idea that echoes throughout history. And, you know, we all take that for granted, but those are freakishly creative people who come up with all these inventions around us that, that govern our lives today. None of us is that freakishly creative. At least very few of us are.
Right.
So we're still using the same, you know, the same monkey brain that cavemen were using 10,000 years ago. But we have to interact with this environment that where every single aspect of our social environment was engineered by people who had bigger ideas than any of us ever will have. And that's why so much, you know, so many of us are miserable, and I think we're asking the wrong questions in terms of how we can get over this misery.
So I don't know. Is it really because is there nothing left to create? So that kind of puts us in misery, or
no? What I mean is that most of the instincts that we're born with were very adaptive for the lifestyle of hunter-gatherers on the Serengeti 100,000 years ago.
Okay.
You know, they're not so adaptive for people living in nation states, you know, especially multi-ethnic nation states and multilingual nation states. And, you know, the fact that you can get in your car and drive a couple hours and you're in a different climate zone, you know, that's something that our ancestors never could have imagined.
Right.
And we're not equipped to deal with that kind of stuff. And you know, the fact that, you know, once upon a time, you know, people lived in these very small tribal groups. You know, you say people could self-govern at a small level. You know, that's called a family or a tribal unit or a clan. You know, you maybe meet 300 people tops your entire life. And that's about as many people as you can keep in your head.
What about the Native Americans who battled over land and held huge pieces of land for
years? About the Native Americans? Because we have different types of Native American civilizations that have existed. Some of them
nomadic, Native American, like to the U.S., Canada, like those types
of
tribes.
But there was also Cahokia, you know, 1,000 years ago, which is near where St. Louis is now. There was a major, major city there. Near the confluence of the Ohio River and the Mississippi and the Missouri, like that whole area.
Yeah, sure, sure.
There was a humongous
everywhere city. I don't want to be.
Yeah, the biggest. And apparently they didn't want to stay there forever either, because or maybe it was smallpox. I don't know.
It was either hot smallpox or they were like,
but it doesn't matter.
We like gay people.
Everywhere you go in the world that human beings have lived in, like you don't have to go far before you find a place where people ended up building some kind of city. At some point, you know, there are maybe vast swaths of land where you didn't, but you know what? They traded with each other still. Like there was still people in it's, but when you get these gigantic city states that, you know, emerge into larger nation states and whatnot, it's something I don't have a problem wrapping my head around. Mm-hmm. You know, I have neighbors where I think they're weird. You know, they don't look like me. They don't talk like me, but you know, based on what I know, I have a reasonable expectation that they're just human beings like anybody else. And so, you know, even though my gut reaction might be like, oh, that's the other. Like, not really.
No, I mean, right. All right, I'll give you an example.
We're not really used to as a species. We're not used to this idea of
community.
People who seem not just community, like a diverse community where there are all kinds of people who come from backgrounds that you can't even fathom.
But that's what we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be that diverse community.
And that's why you know, so many people just aren't mentally equipped to handle that. And that's a real shame. And I don't know what's wrong with
this. No, agreed, 100%. I'll give you an example. There is my next door neighbors. It's duplexes all over my street. Mm-hmm. So my next door neighbors to my left, the upstairs are, I believe, are Cambodian, and the downstairs are, I mean, I probably sound ignorant saying this, there's some type of Middle Eastern, I don't know for sure, right. You know, but their kid was outside. The ice cream truck was coming down, and I was drinking beers on my fucking porch with my buddies, you know? And I'm just the kind of person that's like, if the kid wants fucking ice cream and you don't have the money to give him, and I do, I'm going to give him the kid fucking money for ice cream. You know what I mean? I'm just that type of person. And so I went and I grabbed all like the singles and like quarters I had. And like I told the ice cream man, I was like, hey, wait a second. You know, and I gave the kid probably like $5-6. I was like, hey, that's your ice cream money for the next month. You know, just like trying to be cool with the kid. Walked up on their porch because his mother was so thankful but didn't really speak English. And her mother was on the porch grilling fucking chicken on skewers like over an open fire. And they were all like she didn't know how to say thank you in English. So she was just she like grabbed a newspaper and was just putting these skewers and like handed me some good ass food. You know what I'm saying? And I was like, and that's what I mean by a sense of language. Community. You know, exact nice kindness. Yep. Kindness is just a universal. And I don't get as much of a dick as I am. And as much as I bitch about shit, I'm a pretty nice fucking guy for the most part until you give me a reason not to be.
Well, see, but that's an example of how, you know, you can influence, you know, your community on a local level, but you can't just assume that everybody is going to be like that. And that's
then we kill the ones that aren't.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Civilization as we know it would collapse completely without this concept called trust. I'm in here right now. I didn't bring any weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a couple bucks in my pocket. How do I know you're not going to try and rob me?
Because we're both too fat.
I don't know.
And I'm sweating in this room.
But
I don't have that. I'd rather drink than rob you.
Or how about this? I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me. You know, how about that? How do you know I'm not going to rob you guys? You know,
like, I mean,
there's a fundamental basic level of trust that has to exist in order for society to function. And the more we make people afraid of the other and the less time we spend trying to see things from the other's perspective, then the worse off society is going to be. And people just, you know, I was taught this. These are values I was raised with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't know if it's something, I don't know if it's a genetic thing that my brain is just inherently wired differently from the brain of a bigot, or maybe it was my upbringing. I don't know.
It can't be because I was raised a Jehovah's Witness and I'm completely rewired. Okay. You know what I mean? Like I think that in your formative years, when you start developing your own opinions on things, I think that's when you become the person you're going to be, because those little pockets of like, I don't necessarily agree with this how my parents did. I don't know if you were raised religious or not, but it's like, I don't know if I agree with this on the church. I don't know if I agree with this in school. That's when you start developing your own opinions, and then those start to blossom. Yeah. And that's how you become your own fucking person, in my opinion. I mean, I don't know how science works, but Jesus.
What?
Thank you.
I'm taking that clip out. I don't know how science works. And just putting it.
Fuck you. Don't put my shit out of context, motherfucker.
I love putting your shit out of context. It's my favorite thing. So, you know, you have. But then you have so many different experiences, you know, in those formative times. And, you know, at some point, there has to be some common experience that everybody has that links us together so that we can function as a group.
Yeah, it's called puberty and fucking.
Here's to fucking.
Yay.
And you know what else? You know, like, seriously, okay, so puberty, fucking, eating, and drinking.
Well, now, not everybody experiences those things the same way.
Yeah. That's true. Not everybody. I mean, there's...
I can point to all of those things and say ways in which I... Like each of those items that you just listed, I can tell you ways in which I was completely alienated from society because I did each of those four things different than the average person. And I can tell you that that was a time in my life when the hate really did flow through.
I like that.
And since I've learned how to either, you know, do things in a more normal way or just learn to adapt to the fact that the world is not there to be convenient for me and accept
that.
No,
the world just exists.
Yeah. So like the less time I spend fretting over those differences, over fundamental basics of life, you know, then, you know, then the less hate I have and the less anger I have. And I'm sorry I was not as good a guest as I hoped I would be. You know, if you'd called me 10 years ago, man, the hate would have been flowing.
No, that's all right. So we're called Let the Hate Flow Through You, but I mean, yeah. As every person who listens to the show knows, is all we really do is come for people to have an open discourse.
If it doesn't flow through you, it's just going to get bottled up, and then it will destroy you.
And then you turn into Michael Douglas from Falling Down.
Yeah.
And why haven't they remade that movie yet?
Oh, good God. I'm afraid of what that would be like.
Yeah. I can tell you exactly what it would be like. They're going like to remake the thing that happened in Las Vegas.
It would be like the news.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or
reality has lapped satire.
I mean, that's...
That is a fucking t-shirt.
But, yeah, like puberty. Okay, like, I didn't... My voice never cracked.
Never?
Never.
No, I look at you and I'm like, he's been too tall for his voice to ever crack.
Yeah, you know, like, I was... Like, I had a growth spurt early. I never really had, like, a growth spurt because I was always the tallest kid in the room, except for, you know, a couple exceptions. You know, eating. I was a vegan for almost 5 years.
Yeah.
Before I came to terms with my nihilism. Hmm. And, you know, and then fucking, you know what? I couldn't get a girlfriend to save my life. I did not get to insert tab A into slot B until I was on the verge of my 24th birthday.
You can't call them slots. That's not PC.
I mean, it's not, but they're slots.
It's a Beavis and Butthead joke. I'm sorry. I'm going to bang all the slots.
I think you have lactose intolerance. No, I said I poop a lot.
But no, I mean, like, going back to, like, the people governing themselves, like, I'm not saying that there shouldn't be, I mean, the thing that's problematic with what I said is that it's going to cause more infighting than it won't.
Well, that's entirely possible. Here's what it all comes down to. I think it comes down to what you think the role of government should be, if any, you know. And I think what it comes down to is it exists to, I believe that government exists to protect the average person from the iniquities of powerful people who would exploit us.
Okay, so that's what you believe, but
do
you think that's how government acts?
Not always. Sometimes, but not always. For example, we have a legal system in place right now where if I were to chop one of your heads off right now, you know the law would come down on me like a ton of bricks. All right?
No, but you're a white guy. You might get off.
White on white crime.
It's a big problem in this country.
But if I were a multi-billionaire, you know, insurance company executive, and I start, you know, cheating people out of coverage and skimping on, or a pharmaceutical executive and raising prices on life-saving drugs just because I can, you know, then suddenly very large numbers of people will actually die because of decisions I made, and yet, you'll never see the inside of a jail cell for that. There's other people who believe that the purpose of government is to help the rich and powerful protect their assets from the masses who would take it from them. That's a real serious undercurrent in conservative political philosophy in this country, and they don't want to admit it. In fact, if you want to take a look at philosophy, let's go back to the beginning of Western philosophy, Plato's Republic. If you ever read that book, the very beginning of that book, you have Socrates arguing with these people called the Cynics. And their first question they ask is, you know, what is justice anyway? And the Cynics immediately say, well, justice is that which serves the interests of power. Oh, so Jesus. Over 2,000 years later, we're still not over that question, apparently. And there are still people who have that same cynical philosophy.
Well, because there's money that stands to be made.
There's money to be made, yes. And therefore, the powerful and the rich will continue to propagandize to trick people into voting against their own interests.
Do you want to know when I realized government was a local government, whatever you want to fucking call it, I was bullshit, was when I got my DUI. I had to hire a lawyer. Well, I didn't have to hire a lawyer. I did hire a lawyer, which was the biggest mistake I ever made. Because he didn't do anything for me. I realized that everything that I had, and don't get me wrong, I made a mistake, and I deserved the punishment that I got, and I accepted that. However, they put me in a program where they try to get you to admit you're an alcoholic, which then if you do that, they send you to another program. It's all a government. It's just like religion. So, it's a fucking money-making scheme.
So there we go with an example of how the state is handling things wrong, because just because somebody drives drunk once does not mean they have a drinking problem in general.
Right.
It means they need to reassess their decision-making process.
Agreed.
But it does not necessarily mean that they are addicted to alcohol.
Sure.
And I've seen enough of that among enough people I know over the years that, you know, there's a clear difference.
Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe we want to make sure, you know, let's see. Okay, maybe this person does have a problem. That means they're a potential threat to society. Well, how do we stop them from being a threat to society? Well, we don't want to put them in prison. Well, let's make them go to a program where they have, you know, like I could see the thinking behind this. But the problem is that, you know, especially if you actually are dealing with an addict, you know, no two addicts are going to respond the same.
No.
Well, my response to that is obviously that kind of thing is going to have to be state funded, correct?
Yes, and that's another thing too. All right, the other purpose of the state that I see is to solve problems that the private sector has failed to solve. There's such a thing as a failed market. For example, healthcare. All right,
mm-hmm.
Healthcare.
Yep.
Should not be a for-profit business.
No.
The markets, as we have, you know, we have a unique system in this country, which is to say that we don't have a system at all among, you know, compared to other civilized nations.
Right.
And basically, it's all profit-centered. And when you're talking about life and death matters, you know, we don't have for-profit fire departments. We don't have for-profit police departments. At least we...
Well,
didn't before civil asset forfeiture came around.
Ever heard of Lindale?
With a few exceptions, all right. And, you know, we don't have for-profit public schools for K-12. I mean, there are some out there.
Yes.
But, yeah. You know, the fact of the matter is, like, we've found that there are some social problems there that, you know, if it's going to be solved profitably, it's not going to do much to eliminate huge amounts of pain and suffering that happen in society every day. And if we really want to eliminate the pain and suffering of, you know, millions and millions of people, and we know what it would take to fix their problems, you know, to say that it can only be done through a for-profit mechanism is just, it's absurd and it's inhuman. So, yeah, I think healthcare should be right up there with all the other common goods that we all depend on, like having clean streets, you know, like having... You know, like having drunk drivers answer for their crimes. You know?
Yeah,
I mean everything that's out there that's a potential threat to public safety or your own well-being. If the private sector has failed to come up with a universal solution to it, and other people have come up with other models that actually do result in much better outcomes than what we're used to, well, why isn't government doing that? You know, that's something government is good for.
I just figured it out. I just figured it out. Government should work like the old wrestling territories.
Wait a minute. Hold on a minute.
That's how it should work.
So basically what you're saying is you want to balkanize the United States of America into like various
states.
Okay. And then have no and
territories.
Then, okay. And then you have the National Wrestling Alliance come and bring their fucking champion.
If somebody's fucking up. Like there should be a rule of the standards, and I'm not talking about stone written bullshit. I'm talking about something that's actually for the people by the fucking people. If we're gonna have an overruling government, but we're gonna let the territories, if you will, states at this point, govern themselves. If somebody's fucking up, that's when you bring the big guy in and say, okay, we're gonna reassess things. This is how we're doing it over here, or this is how they're doing it over there. What's going to work best for over here so that we don't have any more of these issues?
Well, we kind of have that already.
No, we fucking don't.
We kind of do. Because you ever heard this expression, the states are the laboratories of democracy?
No.
That's I can't remember who said it, but some famous federal level political figure once said that. And it's true that a lot of states... will come up with some kind of legal innovation, and it solves a problem. And then other states take a look at what they're doing. They're like, oh, yeah, we should try that, too. Like, you know what the first state to allow women to vote was?
Wyoming.
Can you believe that?
No.
That would never happen today, would it?
No.
Yeah.
No, definitely not.
You know,
isn't that the least populated state in the nation?
It is.
Yeah.
It's
one of the biggest, too, if I'm not mistaken. Like, well, in top 10, it's in
I don't know if it's in the top 10 or not, but it's one of those big square states.
Yeah.
I could draw you a map if you want. But, yeah, so, you know, like, there are other problems, too, that, you know, one state, well, take a look at the legalization of cannabis, for example. You know, all these different states are experimenting with different types of legalization regimes. And it's only a matter of time before the federal government will have to catch up, because if enough states see that there's harm reduction from that, they're saving money, maybe they're making money on tax revenue, less people getting involved in crime, you know, because they legalize this product that is so widely used by so many people already, and prohibition did nothing to stop it, you know? So if enough states change
their
laws, and eventually the federal government will follow.
A couple years ago, when that shit really started coming to light, I believe that they did, you know, an anonymous poll, like they always do. It was like they did a poll that was like 58% of Americans either had no problem with people smoking pot or admitted that they smoked pot. So that's well over the majority. In my opinion, 8% is a huge fucking number of people.
Well, I think the numbers are probably even higher now.
No, I would agree, especially with, like, people are, you know, with it being legalized in so many places, or at least medically legalized in so many places, they have to adapt. They have, like, it's something that's forcing the government to change, which has been very interesting to fucking watch.
Yep.
Because, like you said, a swing state like Ohio, didn't they just fucking pass that we're going to get medical?
Medical's happening now.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Although that's a whole other can of worms.
Yeah, no, I think dealers should make money, but that's just me.
Well, that's it's not even that.
I oppose state lotteries, man. The numbers racket's supposed to be the mob's business, you know?
Yeah, well, that, you know, that worked out really well for Don King. At any rate, no, it's the cannabis system in Ohio is bullshit.
Oh, but I do think it's a step in the right direction to allow people to use it without penalization.
But that's the thing, like, there's enough things put in place with this fucking bullshit medical thing that we have here, that, you know, you can still get popped. Because, you know, all they have to do is say you're not vaping it. That's all it takes. And, like,
that's what the rule is? You have to vape it?
You have to vape it.
I mean, that's fine. I mean, that.
No, it isn't. It's not fine.
No. I'm saying vape, like, the vaping of weed is fine. I have no problem with that.
Here's a great example of intellectual dishonesty, the original inspiration for my hate rant tonight. All right. The whole medical marijuana system in this country, the way it's rolled out, is a joke. And it's a sick joke at that, because you have people on both sides who are lying to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You have the people on the prohibitionist side saying, well, no, this has no legitimate medical use. You can't do that. And they're lying to themselves because the medical research clearly shows that there are medicinal uses. Now, on the pro-legalization side, oh, and the other thing too, but what the prohibitionist side says correctly, that the legalization side doesn't want to admit out loud, is that, well, this is just a stepping stone to full legalization. Actually, yeah, that's what is going
on. But that's not a bad thing.
I don't think it's a bad thing, but I do think it's a bad thing that it's being misrepresented.
Demonized.
No. The pro-legalization side is misrepresenting their intention.
Oh, their intention. Okay,
you
know, okay.
If you just want to legalize it for recreational use, like alcohol, then say that's what you're in favor of. Just come out and say it. And then if you want to say that it's medicine, you know, that's a different thing entirely. You know, the way that medicines get approved by the FDA, it's not a perfect system, but it is something that depends on a certain amount of scientific rigor. And it's not something where, like, you just pass a ballot initiative and people are like, oh, I don't know, I was a little less nauseous after my chemo after I smoked a joint. So I think the doctor should be able to say that I should smoke a joint after. So that's, like, ridiculous. Like, that's not how a scientific study is conducted. And then it also does a great disservice to the people who want medicine but don't want to get high. because there's so many different compounds in cannabis that are medically active.
Sure.
Wouldn't you want to just get the one that isolates, you know, that one compound that
which
fixes
they
the problem,
can break down
which
at this point.
They can do that. And legalization is going to make it easier to conduct that kind of research that needs to be done to come up with a more perfect cannabis-derived medication for whatever side effect or, you know, whatever ailment. But then, all right, let's say that, you know, back to the vaping thing, which is what got me off on this. All right. So even if we accept that it had been subjected to rigorous scientific scrutiny and the FDA even came down and said that a doctor can write a prescription for cannabis, you can't smoke indoors anywhere, you know, whether it's tobacco or anything else. So that means that the patient suddenly gets stigmatized, like, oh, I have to take this joint outside to smoke it outside in order to take my medicine. Is there any other medication on the market where you have to go into the alley out back to take it legally?
Heroin. Well,
there you go.
Oh, wait, you said legally. My bad.
Right. No, like, you know, so like it's stigmatizing people who don't necessarily want to be stigmatized.
Yeah.
And you know, they don't necessarily want to get all the effects from it.
I mean, I get what you're saying, but at the same time, that's very fucking, that's as if people gave a shit. You know what I mean? And I don't think that people do. As far as like, oh, I gotta go smoke this joint out. Like nobody's like, oh, the junkie's going outside to smoke a fucking joint. Nobody's saying that.
Well, there might be. You never know with these. You know, there's still some hardcore.
Then let's light
holdouts.
Those cunts on fire.
Well, here's the deal with that. Colorado has basically become the national model of legalization at this point.
That's why the real estate's so expensive there, right?
That's part of the reason. The other reason is
Mountain High.
There was a lot of room to grow, and it has, and so a lot of things are popping up. National companies have headquarters there, et cetera. And there was a huge land boom that it was even there when I was there 15 years ago. Yeah. But basically, like, there are ordinances all over the place. Like, you can't smoke weed here. Like, I don't care if you have a med card or not. Like, you can't smoke weed here.
Then don't smoke fucking weed there.
But it's medicine. Like, shouldn't you be able to take your medicine?
Well, if it's really supposed to be medicine, then shouldn't it be a more refined product to more specifically target what
don't
it is
they
they're trying
Marinol?
To fix? Marinol is just THC and nothing else, and there are other compounds that are active.
Yeah,
that can. You know, did you know that there are cannabinoids in mother's milk? Did
really?
You know that? Yes.
No, I didn't know that.
Specifically, the one that gives you the munchies.
Huh.
That's not just THC that gives you the munchies. You can see an evolutionary advantage.
I feel like Ron White. I did not know that.
to putting an appetite stimulant into, you know, the basic food that the babies get so they can grow faster, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's true. Don't quote me. Don't quote me if it's not true.
Those of you out there that are not they're not intellectually lazy, please go.
Please fact check me and call me out if I'm wrong.
Well, if you're gonna say something like that next time, just you better quote it like Eazy-E. Don't quote me, boy, because I ain't said shit.
Let's stop saying don't quote me, because if nobody quotes you, you haven't said a thing worth saying.
Mm-hmm. There is that.
And I'm quoting somebody else when I say that.
I was waiting for that.
But, you know, with the whole medical thing, you remember during Prohibition, well, you remember like you were there.
Well, my grandfather did, I'm sure. Like, yeah, but there was a time when my grandfather was like 19 or whatever, where weed was legal and alcohol wasn't.
Yeah, but you could have a doctor's note, and like, I need this for my stomach, or I need this for my headaches, and you go get it filled at the pharmacy, and you get whiskey.
Medicinal alcohol is how Walgreens got started.
Let's not talk about old medicine, because I just want them to bring morphine back for headaches and stomach aches, okay?
It's morphine time!
No, and you don't gotta shoot it up, you just... Little swiggy here, little swiggy there. You feel fine, man. You'll be good.
Go, go, Poppy Rangers.
I mean...
I want that to be like an anime cartoon so bad.
I came up with that when I was in sixth grade.
Seriously? Yes. That's brilliant. Dude, I've said this before on the pod. Like, now that opium has been brought up. Me and a buddy of mine, I used to have a really, really... I had an addiction to opiate painkillers.
Okay.
Never did heroin, but, you know, I...
Oh, you're a fancy boy.
No, I'm a hillbilly.
Okay.
What we used to do is we would buy dry poppies on eBay.
Oh, yeah.
And the
extract your own from the seeds.
So what... No, no, it wasn't the seeds. Oh, yeah? So it's when you buy dry bulbs, not poppies, my bad. So it's the poppy bulbs.
Well, I don't know if it has like a bulb as a root, like a tulip does, but like the pod, like it's, after, yeah, after the flower it's, petals all right, fall
so
off.
So like, fuck the stem, you want the pod part.
Exactly.
In the pod, there is these little black spots, because these are dried out at this point. Uh-huh. So like, you can, these haven't even been cut, like, because the way you actually like get good opium is you you continue to slice the plant until it's gone of all of its opium.
Yeah.
So what this was these were dry bulbs. So you can't get them anymore. This was like 10 years ago before they cracked down and everything. You get these dry bulbs that, you know, look like fucking corn stalks kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they have these little black spots all around them. And if the more black spots they have, the better it was. Because those little black spots were that was the opium.
Wow.
So what we used to do was we had coffee grinders, so we would order them in bulk. You know what I mean? So we would fucking get a ton of it all at once. And then we would put it in a coffee grinder and make tea out of it. And it was fucking the worst tasting shit you will ever have in your life. But it will fuck you up. That was like back then.
See, getting fucked up on legal botanicals is that's something I've been aware of for 20 years or so. I've done some stuff you've probably never heard of, and I have a funny story. There are cacti that contain more mescaline than peyote that are actually legal to own.
Wait, what?
There are cacti that contain more mescaline than peyote, pound for pound.
Hmm.
And you can
I'm not a psych guy, though.
Okay.
I am.
I know. I know.
So,
you're a psycho.
Now, once upon a time, this friend of mine had a little poison garden of his own there in his place. And one of these cacti, like, we didn't know how to prepare it, though. Mm-hmm. I was just like, oh, we just eat it. I mean, I don't know. If you take the spines out, it kind of looks like a cucumber.
Right.
But it was so horribly foul tasting. And then I thought, like, okay, well, what if you peel it? Well, it turns out it's all in the skin. So peeling it was a dumb thing to do anyway. But even then, I still, like, oh my God, this is horrible. Like, you know, the most bitter taste ever. And I like bitter things. And then I'm like, oh shit, well, maybe we could just, hey, you have a juicer, don't you? Let's try putting it in a juicer.
Yeah.
And then it comes out as like this one big blob of slime. And like, I don't know, maybe we could try adding sugar or something. He's like, well, I think I have some powdered sugar somewhere. So, like, sprinkling powdered sugar onto this massive green slime blob and then trying to swallow it and then, like, getting it caught in my throat and
dude,
I had to pull it out.
Okay. Oh, Jesus. So, the last time that I had, like, anybody who listens to this podcast that's been a long-time listener knows that I've battled the opiate thing on and off for a long time. Been good for a while now, you know what I mean?
Good for you.
But, like, what helped me get it off...
Mm-hmm.
What helped me, like, through the withdrawal, because that's what I was, I took the pussy way out. I'm not going through withdrawals because I've done that before and it fucking sucks.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, what alternatives can I use to ease this along for me?
Were you in a medical environment?
No,
or is this,
no, this
is
was,
this DIY?
I couldn't because I see my therapist and my doctor work in literally the same office. If I got tested at that time, I would be red flagged. Let's say 10 years down the road, I break my knee and they need to give me narcotics for the pain. I would be red flagged. And I'm a pussy when it comes to that kind of pain.
Do you know what's funny is like narcotic painkillers don't even work on me. Like I could like,
well, next time you get them, just throw my
Vicodins or oxys or something. And like a paper cut still hurts the same.
Well, all right. So, the last time I got off, like, all right, so like I was saying, I was not going to do withdrawals because it's the worst fucking thing that I've ever gone through. I won't say it's the worst thing anybody can go through.
Well, it's horrible. I mean, everybody's seen Trainspotting. I mean, that's not really an exaggeration.
It sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had somebody who I was actually dealing to at the time.
Uh-huh.
And he knew, like, it was to the point where I was selling him shit at a certain price more than what I was getting it for. Mm-hmm. And then buying it back from him at that price. That's how bad it got. Hmm. So when I finally decided that I needed to kick this shit, mm-hmm. like, or I'm gonna probably fucking die. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right. He fucking came in. He was like, okay, I'm never gonna ask you to search for an opiate for me again. He goes, I would like you to delete all those numbers out of your fucking phone. He goes, I'm going to give you I think it was 30 milligrams of kratom or kratom, however you fucking say it.
That stuff, yeah.
And that shit actually helped me kick fucking drugs, dude, because it gives you that tiny little bit of euphoria, like, and it happens for maybe 15, 20 minutes. And then, but you don't feel sick.
Right. Well, afterwards. I mean, the way withdrawal works for a lot of different types of drugs is, you know, you have all these different, you know, receptor sites on your neurons for one neurotransmitter or another. And different drugs will maybe be an agonist or antagonist to one of those receptors or another. And, you know, the more of a substance that you have in your system over time, then like your neurons will actually start changing which receptor sites they're producing.
Yeah.
And so then when you're cut off, then you can no longer function because your brain was rewired to only function with a large amount of that stuff there.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of drugs out there that are used for people who are detoxing from one thing or another, you know, that, yeah, I mean, they will stop some of those withdrawal symptoms, you know, like.
And it's a very natural thing. And then they decided to make it, a Schedule 4? I think they made Kratom.
You know what really gets me is the fact that Ibogaine is still illegal.
Yeah, that, I mean, I would never do that because I know it's a psychoactive and it makes people puke, which I think I hate puking. But like,
well, it gets easier every time.
I do know that it works. That's the thing is, I do know it works.
Yeah,
you know, and that's awesome. That's really fucking cool. It's just like, I don't understand. It's like, okay, so what we're talking to within the last 1,000 years, they've used psychoactive drugs to treat certain things. I mean, and we're talking about people that didn't go to fucking med school. Mm. We're talking about basically, and I'm using quotes, witch doctors.
Yeah.
And guess what? They use fucking cactus poppies and fucking, say it again.
Ayahuasca.
What does it come from?
Let's see. Banisteriopsis caapi is the name of this one vine that they mix. And like, yeah, ayahuasca is typically made by blending these two different herbs together, one which contains DMT, the other which contains an MAO inhibitor. There are other herbs out there.
People have been using that for a long time.
Yeah, I mean,
treat issues.
I could get you like in, it would be perfectly legal. Like you get this one herbal substance that contains, an analog of LSD and another substance that contains an MAO inhibitor, and you mix those together, it'll be the most intense trip you've ever had.
You're saying you can get that for me?
Ladies and gentlemen.
You can get it legally. It's actually for sale.
No, I'm giving you the information. I'll do it.
This episode
I'm not
gonna, of...
I have a phone, for the
podcast,
brother.
Not for the podcast.
This episode of Let the Hate Flow Through You.
How do you think... Salvia divinorum ended up getting outlawed, huh?
Ah.
It became too popular.
Yeah. And people were using it as a marijuana analog, and it's not.
Oh, no, it's not. I watched people smoke salvia. They're idiots.
No,
like I just fucking said. Do you want me to repeat it?
You are intellectually lazy, and that's why you can't handle your salvia. Dr. Sinister, where can we find you on the internet, if at all?
You really can't. I do not have an internet presence except at WCSB.org, where you can stream our station 24/7. And I'm on Sunday nights, 10 to midnight Eastern time.
Every once in a while, you'll hear the guys from Let the Hate Flow Through You on WCSB.
Occasionally. Right.
Occasionally.
Well, Dr. Sinister, thank you very much for coming on.
Again, it is such an honor to have been here with you guys.
Oh, dude, like I've told fucking every guest, after 100, we will start having repeat guests. There's plenty of them that we're not going to have back. This is one I would absolutely be like, yes, he can come back.
Word. So, Jordan, I don't think we're going to find somebody that hates intellectual laziness as much as Dr. Sinister.
No, there is another. I won't apologize again. I'm a rapid offender. You can see right through my skin. I don't care about making mistakes. I keep setting up and falling.
This has been a Lousy Weather Media Network production. Find new episodes and archives at lousyweathermedia.com.